This is FBG Jen
and FBG Kristen.
And I'm FBG Margot, host and producer. You're listening to the podcast that will help you keep a lid on the junk in the trunk and inspire you to live a happy and confident life.
Each episode, we chat with motivational experts and celebs and share our own candid adventures in being healthy.
If you're looking for a podcast that's equal parts hilarious and enlightening, well, then welcome to the Fit Bottoms Girls podcast.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. This is Margot, and on the line today we have Jen.
Hey, guys.
And we have FBG Kristen.
Hi.
And something the three of us have in common is that we're both crazy for animals. I think we're all more comfortable with animals than we are with people sometimes. I know I am. You walk a dog, I'm going to be your new friend. Like,
if we could have dogs on as guests, we would.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be amazing? So we're recording this. It's going to be Pets Week for Fit Bottom Girls. And our special guest today is Dr. V. And Kristen, you are friends with Dr. V, and she's so wise. And why don't you just tell us a little bit about her and how you met her and why she's on the show today?
Sure. So Dr. V is Dr. Jessica Vogelsang. She's got a blog called Paw Curious, which if you guys are animal people, you definitely should be reading it. Like, she's smart. She's funny. She is not afraid to take on semi-controversial topics, but in, you know how sometimes there are those people in your life who are really smart, but they speak at such a high level that you're just like, ugh, I can't.
Right.
She's that level of smart, but she's able to, you know, relay the information in a way that makes sense to, you know, to normal people who didn't go to vet school and, you know, didn't do all this schooling and studying without it, without like talking down, you know. She's still, so anyway, she's just like one of the best people to have a conversation with ever. And we, because in my work outside of FBG, I have been a writer and editor for a number of like pets and animals websites. And so we had met up, I don't know, I think we had like worked together on an article, and then we ended up meeting up at one of the trade shows and hung out. And I was like, oh yes, you are totally my people. So I was really happy when that friendship developed, and we've seen each other in person a few times, but, you know, much more obviously online, because that's how our lives work now, right? But yeah, so when we started talking about doing a special episode for Pets Week, and we were throwing ideas around of who we were going to bring on, I was like, oh, hold on, you guys, I've got somebody. And not only is she, you know, like an awesome blogger and vet, but she also had her first book come out last year. And it's all about, it's called All Dogs Go to Kevin, which we'll talk about in the interview, but it's about the lessons that she learned from her dogs. And they were like things that she didn't learn in vet school. So I was like, that's perfect. That's totally what we want to talk about. So I think it was a really good interview. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did, Margot.
But oh, I loved it.
Yes.
She's amazing. Yeah. And like you said, she's so wise, and she's science based, but she's also, you know, human. She's a person, you know, she gets the human animal connection and how we put so much of our hearts on our animals because they give us so much in return. And that's why it, you know, we hurt so much when they hurt and why we miss them when they're gone and that kind of thing. And I just, her warmth is just so apparent, like the second she starts talking. So I'm so excited she's on the show today. I was really excited to meet her, but I said to you, it's very dog centric today. Next time we have to have a cat show because I'm a cat lady.
Yes, you can totally do that.
So what are your experiences with dogs? I know for me, my parents love dogs, or with animals, excuse me, but my parents love dogs, and I grew up with beagles and golden retrievers, which was just the cutest animals ever. And honestly, if I could bring them into my life now in my apartment and everything, I would totally be doing that. But what is your experience with pets? Did you grow up with them? Were your parents pet people?
Yeah, so I'm super excited to listen to this interview, by the way. Also, I think her book title is so great. Like, that's a great book title.
Always it's really good, and there's a whole story about why that's the book title, so just wait.
Okay. Awesome. No, I grew up, my parents are pet people. I grew up with a cat, a black cat named Amigo, and when I was four, my parents got, we got an Airedale Terrier. We named him Digby. And I remember I got to like pick out the puppy, and I picked up the one that was like running up to us, you know, like was all crazy and full of energy. I'm like, that's the one! My parents are like, great. And then he was the coolest, funniest dog. He used to play like tetherball with himself, and it was awesome. And then Amigo, they had Amigo before I was born. So Amigo ended up being fairly cranky. Most of my memories of Amigo is him like trying to gum my forehead and stuff, but he was, because he didn't have any teeth. But he was awesome. He was awesome. And then my mom's actually allergic to cats, so that was the only cat we had. But then now my husband and I, we adopted a our dog Sienna, and she's a little, like, I call her a purebred mutt. She's just this like shepherd kind of mix, and she's neurotic and incredibly smart and very loving and very protective, and she's our dog. I love dogs. They're the best.
They are the best. I agree. They love you back.
Yeah, they do. And my husband is allergic to cats. Otherwise, I would have gotten a cat a long time ago. I also really love cats. Love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. And actually, when I met my husband, gosh, 17 years ago, he had a cat and like doted on her and loved her. And that was one of the things I loved most about him. Mm-hmm. Early on was this relationship that he had with this big fluffy Maine Coon mix cat, Miko, who was like the best cat ever. Sorry, Trixie, who's my current cat, and sitting here looking at me with severe judgment in her eyes, as she usually does. But Trixie's also very special and sweet, and I love her. But yeah, I've got two dogs now and a cat, two rescue mutts, a lab mix and a very vocal hound mix, which when you're saying if we could have dogs on as guests, I'm like, I'm pretty sure Holly, the hound mix, has been the best for a while, because if like the pool guy comes or FedEx shows up, like she's got stuff to say. But yeah, I grew up with lots of animals. My parents had two black labs when I was born, Brandy and Bullet. Bullet was the largest dog. I mean, he was literally well over 100 pounds. Like, he was like a freakishly large lab. Wow. And then when I was maybe, they passed away when I was young. And then when I was, I think, 3 or 4, probably, we got another black lab. Her name was Lacey. She was like my sister. So, and you know, I'm an only child. So like, we just had this really close relationship, and she was kind of a terrible puppy. She ate a Lazy Boy once, but loved her so much. And then we had cats, and had two cats for a really long time, Cutie and Smokey. They traveled, when my parents started snowbirding, they actually took the cats and the dog. They had another dog at this point, Vinny. He replaced me when I left home. And it's fair, he's prettier than I am. He's a natural blonde. But yeah, they would like take the cats up to Canada with them and then bring them back down to Florida with them. And yeah, so we've always been really big animal people in my family. And I'm so glad that I ended up marrying somebody who's also as into pets, or at least close to as into pets as I am.
It's important. It's important.
So what about you, Margo?
So I grew up with dogs. Totally. Yeah, I grew up with dogs, and when I moved to Brooklyn, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense to have a dog. You know, you have to walk it twice a day, all that stuff. And so my neighbors upstairs, I was really great friends with them. Their daughter got a little baby Maine Coon cat. And they had to go on a vacation and needed somebody to take care of the cat. And I call him my gateway cat because I fell so in love with him. He was just, his name was Motor, and he was a little tiny thing, and he would run around my apartment like a maniac. I'm like, this is incredible. So I adopted Tennessee and Sarah, my two cats. And Sarah is this white fluff ball, and she's amazing. And Tennessee is literally crazy. Tennessee is actually on Prozac. And she got trapped in a box in my apartment, and I think she thought she was suffocating, so she burst out of it a couple of years ago. And after that, she got kind of feral, and I actually, this is a true story, I ran out of my apartment to my vet's office going, my cat is crazy, you need to help me. And he didn't treat me crazy. He just was like, okay, that happens sometimes. And I got Kitty Valium. I'm not kidding. Kitty Xanax, and then Kitty Prozac. And so she's been on the Prozac for 2 years now, and she is an amazing cat. Like it really taught me a lot. I mean, I put a lot of love and effort into her, and she's a little love bug. I wake up every morning, she's right next to me. She's always like a part of my life, but I always thought people who like cats were strange, and especially putting up with their aloofness and their meanness. But I totally get it now, 'cause like I kind of, appreciate that she's a little aloof and a little, you know, kind of makes me work a little harder, you know. I totally appreciate that. So they taught me huge lessons. And I you know, when people don't have pets, I'm like, what's wrong with you? They're so great.
Right. It's like, yeah. How can you not have a pet? How can you not, want unconditional love?
Yeah.
Or seriously. Have to like fight for the love pretty hard and then get it and then it means a lot from a cat.
It really does. It really, really does. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we were talking about off the air, but our favorite books and TV shows. And so what are your favorite books and TV shows about pets?
So I was really struggling to come up with a book. Honestly, I was like, if they all die, like in all the movie, like in all the books, all the dogs die and it's sad. So I'm like so remiss to pick up any book that has a dog, but I did read Marley and Me and I cried my eyes out. And then I watched the movie and I cried my eyes out. But a happy dog piece of media that I have consumed a lot in my childhood and then recently with my daughter is Lady and the Tramp.
Yes.
Love it. Right?
Yes.
Yep. Gwen is obsessed with it. She'll lady, lady. She'll say lady. And she loves dogs. She's like obsessed with our dog and is obsessed with woo, woo, woo. So it's been really fun. And it's just kind of fun to watch that movie over and over again. I mean, there are some racist parts of Lady and the Tramp. So that's kind of a problem. But it's just a good, you know, conversation for us to have.
Isn't that also what Disney is about? Like it's something from our childhood and my mother's childhood. And then you look at it, you know, all these years later, like, oh wow, no. That's
like, right, you're like, oh, that's, we need some context for that.
Yes, yeah. Context.
That's what we do. Lady and the Tramp. And then there are two different books that we have that Gwen has. One's just called Dog and the other one's called Cat. And they're like these little pop-up books. I think my mother-in-law got them at Costco. If you have kids, they're fantastic. They have like every single page has things you can feel or touch. And one of them, like you can lift the dog's leg and he pees. I mean, like hilarious. They're really fun. They rhyme Dog and Cat. I mean, also really creative book names, but yeah.
Nice.
What about
Well, I was just going to say, before I get into my favorites, are you guys familiar with the website, doesthedogdie.com?
No.
That's that way you can brace yourself when you're going to a dog movie, because, like, I'm still scarred from Turner and Hooch. Like, I will never, never get over that. But, yeah, you just go to that and you put it in and it says yes or no. So it's just kind of a good thing to know about if you're like me and it's a matter of whether you need to bring a whole box of tissues and go light on the mascara or what. But there are a few animal books that I have read recently that I thought were really wonderful and powerful and also destroyed me because I sobbed all the way through. A Dog's Purpose. I don't remember when I've ever cried that hard at a book, but it was beautiful. And then The Art of Racing in the Rain is also another really good one. But, you know, like, you know what's happening and you know it's going to be hard, but still, it's just a beautiful, sweet story. So. And we all learn so much from our animals, and I think that that's what comes from those kinds of books, you know, and a lot of times the really big lessons in life, they may not be driven home if there isn't such a poignant, you know, ending to them.
Yeah. Like, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah. How about you, Margot?
I have a hard time with that sadness because I've lost pets in my life that I've missed more than, honest to God, my grandmother. They were so important to me and so special to me that I have a hard time. Like, Turner and Hooch messed me up too. Like, watching Tom Hanks cry, you know, with Mayor Whittingham, like, comforting him, it scarred me. So I have low tolerance for that. So I have to go, like the crazier route. And, like, my favorite show is My Cat from Hell. And actually, Jackson Galaxy, he did me a solid when my cat was going nuts and I didn't know what to do. He's holistic, but he's also realistic. And if your cat has an issue, your pet has an issue, and you need to go to the vet and they need medicine, get them the damn medicine. You know what I mean? And he's been so helpful about just to help cats behave and, you know, having high things for them to climb on and play with them and stuff like that. So he's my hero. If I ever met him, I think I would burst into tears because he means so much to me.
Aw.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I say let's go into the show now with Dr. V. She's got a lot of great information to give us.
Let's do it.
All right. Dr. Jessica Vogelsang is one of the most widely read veterinarians on the web. A graduate of the prestigious UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine with experience in both emergency and general practice, Dr. V, as she likes to be called, started her award-winning website, Paw Curious, in 2009 as a way to share her love of animals with the world. Quickly recognized as an entertaining and informative voice in the pet world, Dr. V has become a sought-after contributor in print, video, and radio. Her first memoir, All Dogs Go to Kevin, Everything Three Dogs Taught Me That I Didn't Learn in Veterinary School, was published in summer 2015 and provided a humorous and touching look at her experiences in vet school, as a new vet, and as a new mother struggling with postpartum depression. She is here today to talk about some of the lessons she learned from her dogs and what she thinks we can probably learn from our pets too. Welcome to the show, Dr. V.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're very excited to have you. This is Margo, and on the line today we have Kristen, and I'm just going to ask you the first question. So the title of your book, All Dogs Go to Kevin, had to come from somewhere. Can you tell me the story about that?
So there's actually two Kevins. One of them is a guy that I knew, and he's a character in the book. But the real reason is when I lost a dog, I was trying to explain to my kids about doggy heaven, and we're not particularly religious. So I was saying, you know, Mulan's up in heaven right now, and my son looks at me with these big eyes like, who's Kevin? Why do I have my dog? I want him back. So that was the original inspiration for the title.
Well, so for everybody listening, Jessica and I are friends offline as well. We've kind of worked together and hung out at some different pet and veterinary conferences. And I think that part of the reason we were kind of drawn to each other is because we're the kinds of women who, like, if we're at a house party, we'll find the wine, and then we're going to find the cat or dog of the house and sit in the corner with them while everybody else kind of mingles. So we were like, you're my people.
Yes.
So with that in mind, Dr. V, could you talk a little bit about some of the lessons that you've learned from your dogs, or maybe from pets that you've treated, when it comes to interacting with others? Because I know some of your dogs have sort of helped you with some of that social awkwardness.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the amazing things about pets is that they're sort of like this great equalizer. I mean, I know that we have so many instances of people that have service dogs, you know, folks that are in wheelchairs or maybe have different disabilities that they're working with. And one of the things that they say is so amazing is not only the fact that this dog is there for them and helps them with certain tasks, but it actually serves as a bridge to people who are maybe not comfortable approaching, or, you know, oh, this is a little awkward, I don't really know how to talk to you, but they're okay going up because there's this dog. And so I think the fact that we have these animals that can sort of bridge this gap between people, it's kind of weird, right? Like, you think, oh, there's another human, I should be able to connect with them. And yet, through our animals, we're able to make this connection that maybe we can't do directly. And that's just something magical that they bring to the table. And I see it over and over. So I know it's not just me.
No, it's not.
No, totally. I'm the same way.
It's not, yeah.
What is the etiquette, by the way, if you're approaching someone who, let's say, is sight impaired and they have a dog? And, you know, of course you want to talk to the person, but the dog is really cute and the dog is doing a great job. Like, do you talk to the person first? Is there, like, what, you're not supposed to give them treats. I know that. I tried to do that once and somebody yelled at me. So what is the etiquette when you're approaching a service dog?
Always, you always, of course, you know, want to address the person and say, hey, you know, what a beautiful pet, may I approach him? And then if they say no, respect that, just because, you know, a lot of these pets do have a job, they're trying to keep their person safe, or maybe they're working through the fact that you have a dog who's easily distractible. And so, you know, you don't want a dog who's going to run off into the street after a hot dog, you know, and bring the person with them. So they do you know, respect the job first. And then, you know, maybe they're just kind of hanging out and then it's fine. And so I think the frustration for many people just comes when they don't ask them and they just go right in and start grabbing them.
And that's kind of a good lesson just in general, not only with, like, service or support animals, but like anybody's dog. You know, I have a feral dog, and yeah, like, it's when parents just tell their children to go running up to Holly, I'm like, well, let's just stop a second and talk about the right way to approach a dog, because running straight at them and screaming and then grabbing at their face, not ideal.
Right. Yeah. And that's a great point, Kristen. I mean, it really is, it's bad etiquette to walk up to someone else's dog and grab them, period.
Yes.
No matter who it is. It's it's always a good idea to ask. And that's something, you know, for me, because I have a golden and he's so gregarious and he's really affable, I really try and use him as an example for kids when they come running up and be like, okay, well, you know, that's great. Brody doesn't mind that you just ran up and grabbed his nose, but let's practice how we do that, because not every pet likes that.
So,
totally.
So you have two kids, correct? And
I do.
And you've been pretty candid about the fact that it always, hasn't always been easy for you adjusting to home life, you know, with multiple family members, including the pets. I always call pets family members. I don't know about you. I do. But sometimes when you have a baby and you have a pet, it's hard to mesh those. Did you find that really challenging? Or do you have tips for people who find, like, I really don't want to ignore this dog. I don't want them to feel lesser than. But, you know, I got to take care of a baby now.
Yeah, you know, there's some really, really wonderful prenatal programs out there for families. And, you know, in San Diego, we have a great one through Sharp Healthcare. A lot of trainers do that where they say bringing home baby. And it's really just some things that you can do, you know, before you have the child to get prepared and get your pet prepared. There's something that I think people really sort of miss the boat on when it comes to aggression. You know, once a pet bites a child, it's pretty much all over. You know, people don't really, by that point, it's kind of too late, right? And so we have a lot of discussions about, well, how do you teach everybody safe interactions from the beginning so these things don't happen? And the problem is whenever a pet's uncomfortable, you know, there are signs whenever somebody says, oh, he bit out of nowhere, you know, that you may think that, but if you're trained and you know what to look for, you know what the signs are. And so I think that's really the key thing for parents to understand. So they're setting everybody up for success. One of the things that drives me bonkers, and I know it does everybody who works in the pet industry, is you see all these really, oh, the pictures on Pinterest, they're so cute. My little baby's riding the dog around like a horse.
Oh, no.
And you look at the dog. Yeah, and, you know, people think it's so cute, and then if you kind of comment on it, everybody is like, oh, spoiled sport, you know, all that stuff. But I know what I'm looking at, and I see a dog who's exhibiting frustrated behavior. They have that big, wide-open eye, and you can tell they're trying to get away, and people are just so busy focusing on their pet in the picture that they don't realize that's going on. And so that goes on for months and months and months and months. And finally, the dog's like, I've had enough, and then it's like, oh, you horrible dog, why didn't you let me know? He's like, I've been trying, lady, I've been talking to you for several months. So that sort of stuff. Obviously, you can tell I haven't stopped for a breath in the last minute and a half, but I am really, really passionate about that, because there's nothing worse than a family who's devastated now because they feel like they need to get rid of this dog because they've exhibited unprovoked aggression, where if they had just known from the beginning, they could have prevented it. There's really no reason. Most of those things have to happen.
Yeah. Now, outside of, you know, dealing with potential aggression issues, which, and I know that we've run a few things on Fit Bottom Mamas about that, because that was something that Jen was really concerned about when she was pregnant with Gwen. But outside of that, the adjustment to having, you know, a new baby at home and then, you know, also having pets to take care of, like, I think some people would see that as just like, oh my God, it's just more and more and more. And I can't deal with the dog, which of course breaks my heart. But from reading All Dogs Go to Kevin, it doesn't seem like that was really entirely your experience. And I think you had a really unique perspective on how your dogs sort of helped you with that transition. And I wondered if you would maybe mind sharing a little bit about that.
You mean about getting through like the postpartum depression stuff?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a few things. First, just to kind of address the greater point about dogs kind of taking a backseat. I think a lot of people have guilt about that, because before you bring home a human baby, this dog is your baby. And so when the baby comes home, people are like, oh my gosh, you know, this dog has sort of taken a different place in the family now, and I feel really, really guilty about that. And my perspective is like, look, it's okay. You know, it's things change, and you're not going to have the same amount of time. And that's all right. You know, dogs have this incredible capacity for forgiveness. So, you know, the first 6 months, and they don't get as many walks, you know, it's okay. It's not a big deal. We have to kind of forgive ourselves. I mean, if you have a second baby come in, the first baby becomes neglected too. So it's not just a dog. We're always in this constant cycle in life of neglecting someone when someone yes. comes along. So that's nothing new. It's not just a dog. For me, it was incredibly helpful to have my golden, and with my firstborn, he did experience a pretty significant postpartum depression. And, you know, you sit there, it's a really lonely, it's a really isolating experience. And so I had this dog who was the only one sort of observing this meltdown, and he would just kind of follow me around like, lady, what the hell's wrong with you? Get your act together. And it was it was nice to have somebody like concerned about you, because nobody else saw it. We get good at hiding those things. You know, by the time my husband got home, I had managed to at least put on pants for the day, and he didn't quite recognize how significant it was. But the dog's like, oh, it's not good. So they ground you. And I think we see that a lot when you have people with all sorts of different things going on. People that, you know, service members who have post-traumatic stress disorder mm-hmm. have actually trained service dogs to recognize these signs of like a sort of a shutdown, and they will approach and nudge it and bring them back. And dogs have this amazing ability to kind of cut through all of these constructs that we put up. You know, we tell other people that we're fine and we'll take it at face value, but a dog knows that's not the case. They're like, I see. I don't care what words are coming out of your mouth, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I can tell what's going on. And so they have that real ability to connect with us in a significant way. And that can be really beneficial when you're struggling.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we're talking about ways that pets make our lives better. And I know personally I have cats, and when I was going through some bereavement issues, they were really helpful to me. They kind of knew when to kind of do the little nudge against the leg, like, hey, come on, we're here, that kind of yeah. thing. Totally. And so what ways can we make our pets feel more awesome? What ways can we enrich their lives even more?
You know, they're so forgiving. You know, they really don't ask much. They want some time. You know, they obviously their basic needs need to be addressed. But anything we can do to sort of look at a pet's life from their perspective and try and enrich it, I think is really wonderful. When you're talking about cats, they have such a different way of viewing the world. Like, they love vertical space. And so something as simple as giving them shelves and vertical space and things to climb can actually make a really significant difference in their happiness. It decreases their anxiety level. With dogs, you know, they need exercise. Every time you have somebody who lives in an apartment, they work 10 hours a day and they have an Australian Shepherd, you know, you wonder why the dog's destroying the house. And it's not because it's a bad dog. It's because you have a dog who should be running, you know, 20 miles a day living in an apartment with no stimulation. And so I think the biggest thing that we can do for them is to understand that, you know, we get them because we want what they can bring to us, but we sort of have an obligation to bring things to them as well, things that are going to be useful and helpful to them.
Yeah, no, there's a quote that you've shared a couple of times, I think, on the Paw Curious Facebook page that's, dogs do speak, but only to those who know how to listen. And I really love that. And I think it kind of ties in with what you were just saying. But I wondered, what does that quote mean to you? And how would you encourage our listeners to listen to their pets, in addition to just kind of researching what it is their pet actually needs on a physical level?
Yeah, I think people don't give themselves enough credit for sort of intuiting things about their pet. You know, somebody will bring a dog into me and say, he's not really feeling well and something's off. I may not be able to figure out exactly what it is, but I believe you, because even though you may not exactly know what it is, there's something that you picked up on in your deep little lizard brain, and you know something's slowing down, the pet's not up to their normal routines, and that's kind of what it really means to me when I picked up that quote. And something that I'm really passionate about is pain management in pets. We're horrible at managing pets' pain, mm-hmm. particularly as as they get older. And everybody says the same thing to me. They're like, well, he's not crying and he's not limping, so he must not be in pain. And I just have to laugh because, you know, I'm getting old now. I have back issues. I'm like, you know, I'm in pain all the time. Like, every second of every day my back hurts, and yet I'm not crying.
I'm not limping.
You know, your chronic pain doesn't express itself overtly. It's more like when I get up in the morning, it may take me 5 minutes to get across the bedroom. It's little things like that, and it's the same with our pets. So we just have to modulate our understanding of what communication means with a pet. It's not one thing. It's, how are they eating? How's their activity level? Like, are they running up the stairs or are they teetering up the stairs? All those little things, that's how they talk to us. And we just need to be open to it.
So my vet recommended for my pet to eat grain-free, that it would be better for them in so many ways, including their behavior. I know it's gaining momentum in the pet food world. What do you think of this trend, grain-free foods?
You know, I think it's a little overrated. When you look at the actual science behind it, celiac disease does not exist in dogs the way that it does in humans. There's just one breed of dog, very small number, that actually have that. And so I don't know. I feel like when you take out a grain, you still have to replace it with another carbohydrate source. And so a lot of these dog foods will put in like potato or something, which has a pretty pronounced glycemic index. And so you're not necessarily getting the benefits that you think you're getting, and it's more expensive. So, you know, if you want to do it, it's fine. But I haven't really seen a big change, as opposed to like a pet that has a food allergy. If they're genuinely allergic to something and you put them on a hypoallergenic diet, that's great. We can see the benefit. If somebody really wants to do grain-free, I'm not going to argue with them. There's plenty of good foods out there, but that's not the first thing that I go to that I think is going to solve any problems.
Awesome. And I think that the other thing that I've learned, like, through some of my work is, you know, if you have a question or a doubt about your pet's food, like, talk to your vet and, you know, like, be open to what they say, because I think that there's a lot of information and there's a lot of misinformation online, and there are a lot of different motives behind what people are putting out there to keep it really nice and PC. So you might read something and it might be totally true, and it also might be totally true for that individual person and their pet in a certain situation. But I just, having a couple of pets who require some special things myself, I really do recommend the chat with your vet. That being said, I have my cat on calming food, which she has stopped peeing in random places for the most part since going on this food. So, I mean,
awesome.
I'm real excited about it. She still marks the doormat by the back door if we leave it down.
Horrible. Having a pet that marks is terrible. Like, I get that. When you're desperate, like, you'll do anything. And, you know, I'm not telling you not to try different things. You know,
totally.
I had a cat who had inflammatory bowel disease, and they put him on raw food. And, you know, some people in the vet world are like, that's like all this horrible voodoo. And it worked. It cleared up his issues. And so I'm not averse to trying different things. You just kind of have to have a clear idea in your mind, more than just the word toxins, about why you think it's going to be beneficial. I mean, if you can't come up with something a little more substantial than that makes me wonder if it's going to make a change. And, you know, if you mess around with the diet, I don't really care. But if somebody asks me straight up if I think it's going to help, probably not. And the reason that I start to get frustrated when I really sort of go over the line into wanting to throw things out the window is when you have somebody who listens to what they read online, and they come to me maybe a year after they noticed a mass and said, well, I would have come to you, but so-and-so said that vets don't know what they're talking about and that all I needed to do was rub some turmeric on it. And it's like, well,
yeah,
you know, I could have taken this off in 2 seconds a year ago, but now is, you know, the size of a grapefruit, and this is going to be a really substantial surgery. So that's when I get mad, when you have somebody's poor advice getting in the way of something that really needed to be done.
It's I hate to say this, but like Goop, you know, with Gwyneth Paltrow, like sometimes she gives like her, her cures for things. Like she's talking now, like she's on the forefront of science and like everyone's just going to come around in 5 years and say, you were so right about the egg thing and the stuff like that, Gwyneth. Like I know people.
Oh, the jade egg?
Oh my God.
Oh, yes.
I want to talk about that on our show one day because it's so crazy.
I just shudder. Exactly. And there are Goop equivalents in the dog world, and some of them are harmless but frustrating, and some of them are genuinely harmful. I mean, there are people out there telling people that you should not vaccinate your pets against parvo, and I just want to grab them and shake them and say, if you ever saw a puppy die of this, you would never say something so irresponsible.
Yeah,
but they won't.
Not to mention, if you ever saw a puppy die of parvo, you probably saw numerous puppies die of parvo, which makes it all the more infuriating.
I have seen many, many dogs die of parvo. I have never seen a dog die of a parvo vaccine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's all I need to know.
Yep.
No, that's good.
All right. So, Jessica, we have one question that we like to ask everybody at the end of our podcast. Really important one here. Super key. And that is, what is the last song you listened to before you joined us for this interview?
Oh wait. I know this. Hang on. I was pressing on the microphone. It was Prince. I think it was When Doves Cry.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good
I'm
one.
In the Prince mood. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was great.
That's excellent. So great.
It's him.
Yes.
I know.
Him and Bowie. I mean, within a few months of each other, it's just, ugh. Well,
too much.
Well, thank you. Dr. V, thank you so much. You're a great guest and we really appreciate you being on the show. And, definitely we should have you back on again because I know I have a bunch of cat questions I'm going to ask you next time.
Okay.
We'll do the kitty show. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe to us on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. And if you love what you're hearing, yay, leave a few stars and review. That would be amazing. Be sure to follow us on all of our social media channels for Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Zen, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Mamas. You just spell it all out and you will find us. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram. Believe me, you will find us. If you want to reach out to say hi, have a question about a recent episode or interview, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if books and movies are also your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book vs. Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thank you so much once again for dropping by. And remember, a life filled with laughter is a life well lived. Bye.